The first real look at holiday retail sales from APM. This is the Marketplace Midday Update podcast. It's December 13th. I am Jeff Horwich. We will talk about the brand new November retail numbers. Also in Europe today, one bank to rule them all. A big step closer to a banking union. Google Maps is back for iPhone. Could this actually be good for Apple? And speaking of Apple, what happens when you give an iPad to the Pope? Yeah, it's about what you'd expect.
Let Marketplace be your guide to the modern world. Subscribe to the Marketplace Tech Report podcast. Find it on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
We will start with U.S. retail sales in November, which rose 0.3%. They rose somewhat more, about 0.5%, if you strip out gas, cars, and building materials, three categories particularly affected by Superstorm Sandy. For November, teasing out the impact of Sandy from the bigger trends in consumer spending is no simple task, as Marketplace's David Weinberg reports.
There's no doubt that some stores got a bump in sales after Hurricane Sandy. Places like Home Depot,
where we might send in two trucks of drywall to a store, we're sending anywhere from 5 to 10 trucks now per week.
Dave Moore is a merchandise manager at Home Depot. He says many of the 400-plus stores in the Northeast are doing more business than normal. But Sandy-related spending, says Bernard Baumol, is a much smaller piece of the pie than Black Friday sales.
Because, you know, Sandy affected mostly the Northeast, but we're talking about sales really nationwide.
Baumol is the chief economist at the Global Economic Group. He says that overall, consumers are much more cautious this year.
That doesn't mean that they're not ready to spend more. I think there's a huge amount of pent-up demand for households.
Baumol says once a decision is made on the fiscal cliff, we could see a boomerang reaction.
Where all that pent-up demand gets unleashed.
So if you're disappointed in that Christmas gift, just wait. I'm David Weinberg for Marketplace.
To get a little deeper on the day's data, let's bring in the smooth Italian sounds of Adolfo Laurenti, Deputy Chief Economist at Mesirow Financial. Good morning.
Good morning, Jeff.
Adolfo, lots of speculative gloom and doom on retail lately. Growth was flat in October. So what are you feeling now that we see what really happened in November?
Well, I think this is a positive and encouraging reading. We saw some growth in auto sales, which was expected because of the aftermath of Hurricane Sandy and the need to replace the fleet. But we also see solid gains in electronics and clothing. Those are important because they show that families have some disposable income available. And that's probably stemming from improvement in the housing market, in the job markets we have seen in recent months. So we take some comfort that going forward, things may continue to improve, and that's definitely something we are all looking for.
And let's take on the other big story this morning. The Federal Reserve is now formally committing itself to loose monetary policy until we reach a desired unemployment rate. Certain Fed board members have speculated this change would happen. Now that it's here, is it a big deal?
It is a big deal. I would say this is a quite historic change. We went from what we call the calendar-based guidance, basically the promise to keep interest rates low for a certain amount of time, to what we call the macroeconomic outcomes guidance, unemployment at 6.5% and or inflation around 2.5%. It makes the Federal Reserve more transparent, more credible. It also adds some new risk, but on balance, it really reaffirms what we already knew, that the Fed is fully committed to continue its monetary accommodation until the economy will be much better, and they are willing to take some risk to make it happen.
As you said, the target is 6.5%. Right now we're at 7.9%. Suggests the Fed is in it for the long haul here, aren't they?
Yes, and you know, the expectation is that this may be somewhat equivalent to the mid-2015 that was previously issued by the Fed, but just communicating the target at 6.5%, they add clarity, and they also add some flexibility if things should get better sooner rather than later.
Adolfo Laurenti, Deputy Chief Economist at Mesirow Financial, thanks as always.
Thank you.
And let's do the numbers. Well, the initial reaction this morning to retail sales and the other data we've got is not positive, but also not extremely distressed, I guess you could say. The Dow is down about 0.25%. as is the NASDAQ, as is the S&P. Markets closed down in Europe as well today, for the most part. New claims for unemployment fell last week here in the U.S. That makes almost a full month now of steady declines. Prices, as reported by U.S. producers, fell in November, thanks largely to a drop in the price of energy. And the founder of Best Buy plans to make an offer to buy back control of the electronics retailer by the end of the week. According to the company's hometown paper, the Minneapolis Star Tribune, the bid will top $5 billion. You might recall that's quite a bit less than this past summer when Richard Schultz first floated this idea. Best Buy shares at this hour are up 16%. We've been covering this week's passage of right-to-work legislation in Michigan. It is considered a major blow to labor unions in the home state of the United Auto Workers. Earlier today, Marketplace heard from Michigan's Republican governor, Rick Snyder. We asked about worries that the change could reduce union membership and hurt wages for middle-class people.
This is giving unions an opportunity to be more responsive to workers because in many respects, it should give a situation where unions can't just assume workers are automatically putting in their dollars. If they show a value proposition, they can join. The other thing is most jobs are non-unionized already, even in Michigan.
For that whole interview with Rick Snyder, head to marketplace.org. But for now, let's talk right to work and some other items in the news for our weekly partnership with Gallup. It's called Attitude Check.
And the latest poll number suggests
margin of error.
There is somewhat of a disconnect.
It's conventional wisdom.
Our survey said.
We will also hit on this week's news that Colorado's governor has officially heeded the verdict of voters and made recreational pot legal there following Washington State last week. Let's get into all of this with Gallup's editor-in-chief, Frank Newport. Hey, Frank.
Good morning.
Well, let's start with issue number one here, the right-to-work debate that played out in Michigan. How have Americans' feelings about labor unions changed over time?
They have become a little less positive. And you say over time, did you know that we first asked that question in 1936? That is, Gallup is actually one of the very first questions Gallup ever asked back in the Depression.
Wow.
Do you approve or disapprove of labor unions? 72% at that point said they approved. This was in the middle of the Depression, mind you. It's come down some over the years, but our most recent asking this year, 52% of Americans continue to approve of labor unions, just that general question, and 42% say they disapprove.
And item number two from the recent headlines, legalized recreational marijuana in Colorado and Washington State. First of all, Frank, what do Americans think now about legalized pot and whether the federal government should get involved?
Well, you know, those are two separate questions. Americans are divided on the basic question of whether marijuana should be legal. When we just ask it that way, no qualifications, is right now 50% and 48% say should not be made legal, should be made legal, so it splits equally. When we say medicinal uses, 70% say yes, so it really depends on how you define what its use is. Should the federal government get involved, like in the state of Washington or Colorado, because the laws are now conflicting? State laws say you can possess pot, the federal controlled Substance Act says you can't. Americans say hands off to the feds. We just asked that question. Only 34% said the federal government should try to get involved in state laws about marijuana.
And how have opinions about legalizing marijuana changed over time?
We first asked that question in about 1970. That one didn't go all the way back to the Depression. But at that point, we had only about 10% who said marijuana should be legal. And mind you, that's the, you know, the Woodstock era back then, but very, very high opposition to it. And that's mellowed, if I can use that word, over the decades. And now American public is split.
Gallup's editor-in-chief, Frank Newport. Thank you, Frank.
My pleasure.
On that note, U.S. Border Patrol agents are disclosing one of the most innovative attempts they have ever seen to get marijuana across the border. Smugglers loaded 85-pound canisters of pot into a cannon on the Mexican side and then fired them over the fence into Arizona. Nice. 33 of these canisters in all, but agents found the pot cannonballs before they could be picked up by whoever was supposed to pick them up. The Border Patrol says the episode falls in a category along with the attempts to fling pot over by catapult and to strap marijuana to remote-controlled airplanes.
Do you enjoy the music we play between stories? Visit the Marketplace Music section to browse playlists for all of our programs and to buy those songs on Amazon. A percentage of each purchase goes towards supporting our programs. Find more online at marketplace.org/music.
European finance ministers have struck what they call a historic deal over the debt crisis there. They have agreed the European Central Bank, which is Europe's equivalent of the Fed, should become the principal overseer of the continent's biggest banks. From Marketplace's European desk, here's Stephen Beard.
Under the deal, the European Central Bank will directly regulate the top 200 banks in the Eurozone. The ECB will have the power to shut down those banks if they break the rules, such as engaging in risky lending. This will pave the way for the Eurozone bailout fund to pump money directly into struggling banks. Christian Schulz of the German bank Berenberg says this is without doubt an historic agreement.
It will make countries even more interdependent. Countries' largest banks, when they fail, can be saved by the Eurozone as a whole. So it's a big step towards more integration.
But he says it won't end the current crisis. The measures won't take effect until the year after next, and member countries, including Germany, can veto any bank bailout. The Germans have the deepest pockets, but they're extremely loath to bankroll what they regard as irresponsible behaviour by their southern neighbours. In London, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
China's new leader, Xi Jinping, is launching a big anti-corruption campaign, and he's promising economic reforms. He has just returned from a trip to the southern city of Shenzhen. Earlier today, our China bureau chief, Rob Schmitz, checked in with my colleague, Jeremy Hobson. And here's Jeremy.
Well, so give us the significance first of this trip to Shenzhen.
Well, you know, Shenzhen, which borders Hong Kong, was China's first experiment with a free market system. Former leader Deng Xiaoping made a very famous tour to the city 20 years ago, which launched broad economic reforms in China. Ever since then, China's economy has enjoyed GDP growth into the double digits. So for Xi to choose Shenzhen as his first official trip is a message that he, too, is interested in economic reforms.
Well, so what does he want to reform?
Well, that's a big question. He's hyped up economic reforms with this trip, and now comes the hard part. He's going to have to go head-to-head with these enormous state-owned companies, the dinosaurs of communist China, in order to shift more capital from their sector to the private sector. I spoke with Jim McGregor about this today. He's the author of No Ancient Wisdom, No Followers. It's a book about the challenges of China's economic system, and here's what he said.
The economy can't keep growing with the current state enterprise-centered model. And so he has to reignite private enterprise, and he has to regain the confidence of foreign business who are doing business here but have lost confidence in the government and the government's willingness to even give them a decent chance here.
So a big challenge ahead for Xi Jinping, Rob. What if he doesn't get this done?
Well, if they fail at this, China will become a less attractive place for foreign companies due to business for a host of reasons, not least of which will be the country's economic vitality. Economists may differ on China's prospects, but they all agree that China's economy as it stands won't be sustainable much longer. You know, so if China can build that private sector, inject more confidence in the marketplace and make people feel safer to consume, then most economists agree the economy will be on a healthier path.
Marketplace China Bureau Chief Rob Schmitz joining us from Shanghai. Thanks, Rob.
Thanks, Jeremy.
There is a new and maybe not so welcome arrival in the Apple App Store. Late yesterday, Google Maps for iPhone became available. You might recall that Apple recently dumped Google Maps from its devices in favor of its own map program, which has had a rocky reception, say the least. Now Google Maps is back and the battle is on. This is a gadget story, to be sure, but there's also a lot of money at stake. For more on that, I've got Carl Howe. He's an analyst at the Yankee Group. Good to talk with you.
It's a pleasure to be here.
So this is more than just a battle for tech supremacy and bragging points. What's the business potential of being the go-to map application?
Well, this is a case where I think this may be actually more important to Google than it is to Apple, simply because Google makes advertising revenue from its mapping app, whereas for Apple, this is just one more piece of that overall iPhone experience that they sell. But in both cases, these are apps that people use, if not every day, at least on a weekly or monthly basis, and consumers really depend on them.
And if you do use them regularly, you start to realize it's almost like a geographic search engine, right? I mean, it's a map, but it's also a gateway to all kinds of things that can help make somebody else money.
I think that's a great point, that they are giving indications of points of interest and restaurants you might want to visit and ratings for those restaurants. It really is a way to drive traffic to a lot of different types of businesses.
Did Apple, you think, really have any choice about letting Google release Google Maps in the Apple App Store? I'm sure that was painful.
I think they got a lot of what they were looking for. This all came about because Google and Apple had reached an impasse. Apple wanted to have turn-by-turn directions and some of the other features that Google puts on Android. Google refused. So Apple built their own app, and Google saw them losing that critical home spot on the iPhone screen. And so they rushed to put this together, and they caved. They basically put in all the same features that are now available on Android. As a matter of fact, the iOS app is now a little ahead of the Android Maps app.
So it's possible, if I hear you correctly, to actually cast this as something of a victory for Apple?
You could cast this as a victory for Apple, absolutely. Simply because, again, they were looking to create an experience, and they wanted their users to have a great turn-by-turn experience. Google wasn't willing to give it to them, so they found another way.
All right. I appreciate the insight. Carl Howe, analyst at the Yankee Group. Thank you.
My pleasure.
And finally here, the Murphy's Law of big technology debut events is that when the magic button is pressed, something will inevitably go wrong. It has happened to Apple, it's happened to Microsoft, and so it was yesterday with the Pope. The masses had assembled at the Vatican, and TV cameras were rolling for Pope Benedict to send his first tweet. So he put his finger to the iPad that had been placed in front of him, and nothing. If you look at the pictures of this event, the Pope is kind of looking at this thing in confusion with his hand up, just kind of waiting for something to happen. Evidently, he was pressing too hard. He's not exactly a regular iPad user, I guess. A more experienced archbishop stepped in with the right touch and out went the first papal blessing. Dear friends, I am pleased to get in touch with you through Twitter. I bless all of you from my heart. And what a lovely note to end today's Marketplace Midday Update. I'm Jeff Horwich. And this is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.